Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Football on Off The Ball. That was huge for them because they're going to hype this up, and they did hype this up as, like, Alan Shearer and Guy Mowbray said after the game, the greatest English result in a World Cup since 66. Yeah, and one of the greatest English performances.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
All right, you are very welcome along. Unbelievably busy programme for you and plenty for us to get through. Matty Whittaker's going to join us in the studio at 9.15. We've got the breakfast buffet at 8.45. Marcela Mora Iorojo at 8.15 after more heroics from Argentina to continue to be alive in the competition. And we're going to start with everything else. Full house. Colin, good morning to you.
What's the story?
Matthew, good morning to you.
Sure.
Enda, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We should really be starting with the Rovers being beaten 2-0 in Europe last night. Because, you know, 10 to 10 men, they've got an overturned 2-goal deficit. It's not beyond them. We've seen them do it in recent memory, right? But... Yikes. Not great if they don't win.
That's Champions League qualifying, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose not the end of the world, but it does make their...
Well, you want to win this round.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you want to get one or two under the belt so that you have the fallback then of being able to get to a point where you're almost guaranteed conference league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the draw came out and it's like Floriana, Malta, it's not going to be easy, but there were harder teams in the thing. And you're like, oof.
Yeah.
It just went a little bit under the radar yesterday.
Mm. Yeah.
For sure.
Shells played Celtic.
He goes on the couch. Yeah, the noise was unbelievable. Yeah.
Talk apart.
Very late, two to very late goals.
Martin O'Neill was asked about transfers on the pitch. I'd say it was occurring just as Argentina and Egypt was culminating in one of the greatest halves of football I've ever seen. I was just saying it beforehand there. Isn't there something absolutely joyous and childlike about a player running the pitch?
Yeah.
Just with gay abandon.
Yeah.
Not caring of the consequences.
Dribbling, you mean?
Yeah, dribbling, that's the word. And you don't see it that often.
That's actually a very good point. It was dribbling. And we don't see a whole lot of dribbling. Especially from positions like that where... For a team like that too, where I imagine they were told, do not do anything that isn't safe. Just get rid of that ball at any given opportunity. Especially when you're in a position of strength as they were 1-0 up.
One of the football hacks had been like, I've never watched... Egypt playing a good game in my entire life.
Yeah.
And that had generally been the...
We were all saying that the last time Egypt played, you know?
This is going to be pretty grim.
But it turns out, you know, styles make fights and this is good chemistry.
That's my biggest takeaway from the tournament. Like, I knew it was a thing already, of course, that, you know, not every... You can't compare Egypt-Australia to Egypt-Argentina because the game set's going to be different. But I don't think that's been more evident in a tournament than this one.
Yeah, except that Egypt obviously decided, well, we've literally nothing to lose here. Yeah.
I love watching anyone do that. In any part of life, but there's something in football particularly where it was like, I don't care anymore, I'm just going to try to be myself, or actually in that case play above their station. Because how many sides who were the underdogs would have gone completely within themselves after that second goal was disallowed?
Oh yeah.
And then to go and score not quite as beautiful but nearly as great, an actual legitimate second goal. But I don't know about ye watching and everyone out there, as soon as Argentina got the one back, I actually said audibly in the living room, oh no, because I straight away went to 2-all. I was like, there's absolutely no way Egypt are holding out here. Because Egypt got one touch in the box in the first half, and that was the goal. And their second touch was the disallowed goal. But they were frightening on the counter-attack, but as soon as these boys get one goal, and that's when you're talking about inevitably the small fellow up top, or wherever he plays.
As opposed to the small fellow at the back who got out-jumped for the header.
That's... five African teams now knocked out in the last 5 minutes of the match.
Ah, oh, jeez.
South Africa, Senegal, DR Congo, Ivory Coast.
What's that?
Egypt.
About?
And it also means that there's only one African side left in the competition after doing so well in the group stages.
Was it nine of the 10 of them came out of the groups? Just Tunisia?
Just Tunisia didn't get out
and
of the groups.
And then, like you say, one left. Bloody hell.
The Senegal one is still the worst, though. That was...
That's...
2-0 up against Belgium.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And talk about cruising. Belgium looked like they didn't want to be there. Some mad subs from Garcia in that game. He whipped De Bruyne off and he whipped Doku off. And it was like, right, have a go. And they didn't even have a go. They didn't even have a go. And then eventually they got back, That is heartbreaking stuff, to be fair.
Cristiano's sickened even more now after Messi. Because he wasn't great, like, for a long... The two-thirds of that match, he was anonymous. Or dare I say bad.
Yeah, he looked
like... What's wrong with him in penalties?
Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it?
50-50, turns out. It's a lottery.
Yeah, he's
Leo Messi standing over is like the penalty of being a lottery.
Depending on how you view the volume of a glass, he's either scored 4 from 8 or missed 4 from 8. And it's a weird thing. There's loads of theories like, are penalties too easy for him?
You got to take it off.
Too many options.
Don't you?
No. I don't think he'll ever... He needs to redeem himself.
No, you just got to decide that, like...
He's the first player to miss 2 penalties at a World Cup.
I would like to see, though, how many penalties he missed of consequence. Like there are because he's so good, he generally makes up for it at some stage in the game. But I would like to, like, he's taken so many penalties, it'd be almost impossible to check this. But I would like to see how many games he's been involved with that he's missed the penalty, either in a shootout or during the game, that his team have not then gone on to win or draw or get a result.
He did, didn't he? Miss? Didn't
that's
he?
Big homework for you, Ender, today.
That is
in your future.
Oh, I didn't he miss
it'll only take me 10 days or so to do that
when
he'll come back and be like, remember that thing? I was like, no, remember. What was that about?
Oh,
that,
because I just nothing springs to mind. Maybe someone in the comments, nothing the springs Chile, to mind in him missing a penalty in a shootout or
Chile Cup America wins. He definitely missed him one of them. He definitely missed him one of them. But you're right. But at the same time, the consequence thing is retrospective, isn't it? I suppose. But the point still stands in that he does tend to recover. He looked like a 39-year-old man there for the majority of the game yesterday. But then there was one moment he picked the ball up on the right hand side, and there was like 4 or 5 Egyptian fellas in front of him, and he just like knocked the ball one side of him, and you're looking at the ball, and then suddenly you're like, wait, how is he the other side? And he has the ball and he went the square across, I think, to Martinez, and he made a bit of a mess of it. But it's just amazing to still be able to watch it and still see glimpses of 2014, 2018, you know, still see that's still there.
Yeah.
I do think keeper maybe could have done a little bit better for the goal, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, he's certainly something.
The 5 o'clock kickoff, not to complain about kickoffs that I can actually watch, it did fall on the worst possible day with the heat wave happening. Because there were several things that I could have been doing yesterday. I was like, will I go out for an afternoon round of golf? Egypt against Argentina at 5 o'clock. Shells taking on Celtic. Maybe I'll head out to Choco Park. Egypt, Argentina in the World Cup. So, look, you can't win with this World Cup. But we're getting to the stage now with the semi-finals. They're all going to be 8 o'clock. The quarterfinals are only one that potentially is in borderline not watchable, and that's Argentina against Switzerland, which is 2 a.m. on Saturday/Sunday. Could stay up. It's 10 o'clock is the England game on Saturday night, so ride the power train, sleep on Sunday. But
that's an unbelievable day of sport as well. You've got the Talent Cup final, you've got Loudon Mayo into England, then into Argentina, Switzerland. I do think Argentina, Colombia would have been a far more exciting tie just with the nature of it. And
Colombia took 4 points off them in the
qualifiers. Yeah,
there was Argentina fans celebrating in
the airport. Airport.
Yeah, see that tweet because they didn't want to avoid a derby. So I think Switzerland's first ever quarterfinal, and no one has anything to say about Switzerland. Just they have a couple of players that are always at World Cups, but they've never been this far before. There's a few factors like that. I heard this is on ITV, wasn't it? ITV commentator saying, first time Argentina, I get this right, they're behind at halftime since 2010 in the World Cup.
Really?
Which just seems like, you know, obviously like 2010, it's like 16 years ago, but it's only a couple of World Cups. But it's still like, they're never in this position, and they've never come from 2-0 down, which has happened 13 times to them. So there's little stats like that. But again, I'll go back to what I said a few minutes ago. I don't know about you, I haven't heard you on this. As soon as they got one back, I was like, there's just no way.
Yeah.
There's just no way. And I actually thought, per our discussion the day before about our relief when Mikel Moreno got the winner, because that's not going to extra time. I was like, I think this is going to be done before we get to extra time and all. The momentum's with them.
Whereas...
And what a winner, by the way.
The other game. was like, this is desolate.
Well, I left the
cup. Actually went to bed and couldn't sleep and got back up just in time to see the penalties.
I went all in the Djokovic match because it was brilliant against Felix Auger-Aliassime. He went the distance.
You actually didn't need to. I literally had two TVs. One is watching the football and then you can just come in and go, it's still on serve. It's going, yeah.
They were breaking each other.
Well, so it looked like it was on serve.
It should have been over in the fourth set. He was a breakup early. But the Colombian match, I watched a few minutes of it. And
on the tennis, he wins the second set 6-3.
Felix.
Well, it was 5-3. I went out, had dinner, came back, and it was the first game of the third set. This game is taking forever.
They were taking a long time. They were going to deuces and advantages several times.
It was like a clay court match.
He's a player who always threatened to do more, like Auger-Aliassime. He's never been to a Grand Slam final, which is an underperformance considering his talent. He was third seed at this.
I actually had to Google him. Like,
really?
The 23 year, he was knocked out in the first round of everything except one of them. And then he was in the semifinals of the US Open last year. So he came at a breakout year at 18, really good year at 20. And then disappeared for a couple of years, whatever was going on.
He has a lot of talent and like a scalp in him. He's kind of like, if you follow tennis, like Alex de Minaur, the Australian, who got knocked out this year, and he said, this is going to be harder and harder for me to ever make a breakthrough. It must be like generationally traumatising for that group of lads who had to share a court with the big three because they're just never going to penetrate. And now is the time to come through and it's too late for them. It's too late for those boys because now you have Alcaraz and Sinner.
You're de Minaur's. It's not too late for Felix, he's 25.
He's the thing, what we've been talking about him for, I'd say since 2019, people have been talking about Auger-Aliassime. But a great match, so I went all in on that because I actually haven't seen barely anything of Colombia World Cup.
They've been on at like 2 a.m. All the time.
But they had a really good World Cup actually on paper. They drew with Portugal, but they won their first game 3-1 against Uzbekistan, who weren't great. And then they beat Ghana in the last 32, didn't they?
Ghana 1-0, but they had like 4 disallowed in that game.
Yeah.
And they should have beaten Portugal. They were considerably better than them.
And their other group game, they won 1-0 as well. So they had a decent World Cup, but I just never got stuck into them.
Yeah, I got that mixed up. The Ghana game was the knockout game, and then the Or Congo game. They won that 1-0, but they should have won about 4-0. But they'll still be disappointed, I think.
Oh, yeah.
They'll still be very... That's a missed opportunity for them. They've only been in... It's funny as well, they lost to... The quarterfinals the furthest they've gone. They would have fancied their chances against Argentina, I think. And they didn't qualify for the last World Cup. And 2018, they went out on penalties to England.
They're like very highly ranked. It was second highest teams against each other in the World Cup so far, I think.
Mm.
Portugal, Spain, and then that was
next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The two shittest games.
Yeah, disappointing as well. James Rodriguez now was probably going to be gone too. Didn't really make a stamp on the game last night, but.
Wasn't totally useless.
Wasn't useless, no. No, not at all. He had a decent tournament. He had a really good Copa America the last time out as well. He won player of the tournament at that, I think. Obviously lost to Argentina in the final. He obviously made his star at the 2014 World Cup, and 12 years later, that's probably the end of him. He's 34 now, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
Nah, listen, stranger things have happened, but I think James Rodriguez is on the final tether of his career at this stage. He's playing over the Met well. He's with a club over in America. I don't know how much playing he's doing.
Mm. Yeah. As World Cups go, though, we got through all of the last 16 games until the last one without any nil-all draws. Mm. The Switzerland-Colombia game was the first nil-all draw out of them all.
It was a tough watch. It was a tough watch. But the only thing about it, I will say, and I had a similar feeling with the Spain-Portugal game, maybe to a lesser degree because you expect more from two teams like that as far as entertainment goes. Not that they have any kind of... requirement to give us entertainment, they just want to win the game, but it did feel like knockout football. I think a lot of the games, like the Egypt-Argentina game, felt like knockout football in a sense because of the fact that Argentina had to go balls to the wall to get through, but the tense nature of feeling like every pass matters, every decision matters, every time someone takes a shot this could be the end, I think that came across in the Spain-Portugal game and the Colombia-Switzerland game, and I think there is a place for that, and I think that's probably something that's going to become more evident over the next what's left to the tournament, 10 days.
Mm. Today's the first break, yeah. It's the rhythm will change from today.
What do you think of the spread of talent across this competition? Because like the argument with the 48 teams was that, well, they'll give the opportunity to have more nations get further in the competition and stop it from being a European, South American dominated thing. Now we end up with quarterfinals and you've got six Europeans, one South American, one African. So we're back to square one almost. It feels a little bit like the Champions League in that the league format, the Swiss format, was supposed to spread it out a little bit, give people the opportunities. And really all it does is provide those opportunities in the early stages. Maybe. Or is it maybe an argument that cream always rises to the top?
Now, the only counter to that is you've had three big nations. Germany, the Netherlands, Brazil are gone before we have a break.
Portugal as well, but they were beaten by a top nation.
Yeah, so. But still, there's four big enough countries gone, and then you look at like Norway, this is the best they've ever done. Switzerland is the best they've ever done. And you still have, you probably still have the best left, don't you? There's been no absolutely seismic shocks. So you still have the big boys to make it as top quality as possible, and you still have a couple of shocks. I think it's pretty good to answer your question. I'm happy. We were only talking about it beforehand. I'm happy enough with the eight teams in the quarterfinals.
Yeah. Look, we could just be at the start of this iteration of African and Arab teams developing, like we see with Morocco got to the semi-final now. Their potential, like if they get past France, they are favourites to win the tournament, I would say. But look, it's going to be a big ask. Maybe this is the first step for those African nations, North African nations, to
maybe
take a step into the knockout stages. Loads of them got through, fell short, last minute goals, learn from that, develop more talent, potentially build their scouting networks to bring more players home from European nations and South American nations.
I didn't know about that statistic about conceding so many in the last 5 minutes between them.
It was Simon Cooper that had that up.
I don't know if that's, is that a self-belief thing? Is it a coincidental thing? Stamina, game management, whatever.
Well,
how do you improve all that?
There could be the tactical side of things where we're talking about these hydration breaks. Like, legitimately, is that causing the fall of these sides that don't have top-level coaches in the same sense as the European sides do? And being able to interrupt the flow of the game really helps those sides, potentially.
But it's going to show how much difference 5 minutes can make, because you think, oh, it's only 5 minutes, but like it is a lifetime in that scenario if you're not mentally prepared for it. And maybe it's the mental preparation of going that far.
There's also the mental thing of a game it actually being the equivalent of, you know, the 88
minute. Well, it's a little gripe I have when a commentator is like 83rd minute and 7 minutes left. There's like,
there's like 20.
Possibly 17 left. Yeah. And the players know this. Yeah. And it goes, that could point to a number of factors, but the statistic is interesting. I don't know, I'm pretty pleased with what we're left with. Like, there's not a stinker between them. I would have loved to have seen Argentina-Colombia, for sure. Mm. And I'd be disappointed if Switzerland beat Argentina, because I'd like to see them keep going now.
Yeah, I come back to my underdog thing. I actually think, as far as my kind of take on underdogs going too far and what they can contribute to a tournament, I think Egypt, and to be fair, we haven't really touched on any of the decisions that they can maybe feel harshly done by. Well, they do feel harshly done by, whether they should do or not, it's probably another thing. There's definitely one or two throughout the game that didn't go in their favour for one reason or another, but they made a game that shouldn't have been a game, a really exciting product, but haven't taken away from what's left of the tournament, in that Argentina being in the quarterfinals is objectively more beneficial to the tournament than Egypt being in the quarterfinals. So I think that's a perfect example of what I like to see from an underdog. Mm. Go on, give us something, but don't take away from everyone else.
We have a few romantics in the room here of the football variety. Does anybody think that the goal should have stood? The Egypt one, it was, you could say it doesn't matter, they got their second one anyway, but there's a lot of I think initial outrage, you can't disallow it for that, and then you go back and nobody can deny that it's a foul, but in the spirit of the game, let the play continue, because the ball is up the other end of the pitch.
I think by the letter of the law, it was the correct decision.
Doesn't feel right.
I don't like the law.
I was an ass.
So the
Egypt manager went in two-footed on FIFA afterwards, right? A couple of the players too as well, for Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have, in anyone's opinion, legitimate grievances with any decisions? So there's talk of the match-winning goal by Argentina. There was a couple of fouls beforehand that Egypt have claimed that I think they briefly looked at weren't given.
Yeah.
Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Yeah, I think the two of those would have been harsh.
And Carol Leary asking her Egypt robbed question mark. Feel like to me they were robbed.
No, I don't think you can be robbed if you're 2-0 up with 15 minutes to go and lose 3-2. But yeah, as you've seen them given, I think particularly the Salah one is it's a coming together, whatever that means. But you've seen them given, I suppose. The McAllister one where he drags him back is a little less egregious, I suppose. I wouldn't be given that one myself. But there's other decisions throughout the game. There was one where Tagliafico throws an elbow, doesn't get booked out on the side. There's another one where Salah picks up the ball on the halfway line after a bit of a break and gets called back for a foul that is very soft. There's little things like that, I think. They did have chances. Marmoush has a breakaway. They've got a 3-on-2. He delays the pass for about 10 seconds too long. Mm-hmm. It gets intercepted with the game at 2-all. I always think you have to look at yourself in these situations, but absolutely they can feel aggrieved because the foul on Martinez probably is a foul, but it's so far removed from what happens. Argentina have an abundance of opportunities to stop that goal happening after that, and I just think I was going to say where do you draw the line, but I know where you draw the line. If the ball goes out of play, that's the next phase of play, and it's forgotten about. But you know.
Do you know how far away though the Egypt disallow goal was from the foul was that they sped it up on TV, the replay.
Yeah.
Like, this will actually go on for too long for our liking.
And that's also another thing as well. I think because the McAllister pullback is in the box and because the foul on Salah is in the box, they would have to overturn a goal for Argentina and give a penalty to Egypt. I think that opens up a whole other can of worms. I think if it's in the middle of the pitch, it's far more likely to be overturned. But
yeah.
there is a higher.
Is it a foul on Salah?
There's a higher threshold for penalty decisions.
I don't know, but it's one of them. He gets the ball is gone, and then the legs come together. It's.
But if it's in the box, they do referee it differently.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
penalties. They do. So they're going to make. That's why it's not the same. There's that old cliche. If it was in the middle of the pitch, it would have been a free.
I know. It's just mad that there's such inconsistencies at this World Cup where some of those, I think, have Argentina benefited? Was the foul of McAllister in the previous game, am I thinking of the right one, where it was just a tussle in the box that hasn't been given all tournament, and VAR is like, oh, clear penalty. What? I mean, it's literally happening in every corner kick. Am I thinking of the right one?
I'm not sure. I know there was one with Vega for Portugal where he got pulled back against Croatia from a corner, and then Ronaldo obviously scored a penalty. I'm trying to think Argentina with McAllister. You might be right, it's just not coming to my head right now.
I actually hadn't seen the McAllister issue in the penalty, in the scoring of the goal. It's mad that it happens exactly the same thing.
I do think that's a very fair point from Finbar in the comments. He says Egypt were 100% robbed. I'm not sure about that, but he says if that happened to Ireland, there would be outrage this morning, and that is true. We would be going absolutely mental.
It's like which specific part are we going mental at? I'm just looking back on the match winning goal here for Argentina. Which part will we be going mental at this morning?
I just think that the general feeling we would have around the game in the amount of calls that didn't go in our favour.
So on the
50-50 calls.
On the Egypt disallowed second goal.
Yeah.
I do think part of the issue with the phase of play confusion and whether or not they went back too far is the fact that Hassan runs from it's tackle one pass and then he runs to the other side of the pitch with the ball without breaking that part of the play. I think if he plays a pass earlier and Egypt recycle the ball and then go up on the counter-attack, potentially it's pulled back way before the ball reaches the net. I think the issue is that the play doesn't break at all, so the referee would have to stop it. before the ball gets into the back of the net.
I think if
for him to call it back for the...
Say they punted the ball forward and it went in off someone's arse and it was a horrible looking goal, you'd all be like, oh, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
It's just that it was such a nice goal that everyone's can't be disallowing that.
Yeah, well, that's 100% what it is. Yeah, 100% what it is. But I think that's a valid feeling though.
But it is, because that's what we're all here for in football, right? We're not here for a foul, we're here for the great goal.
The foul is a foul.
But everyone understands, look, it's the equivalent of like, you rise from the stool in the pub and you're outraged and you sit back down and the adrenaline wears off and you're like, that's probably right.
Yeah. Hey, you kind of laugh, you're like,
It was an outrageous goal.
It was sensational.
It was just, you know, it's just like suddenly, this only happens at World Cups, you get players totally inspired and do something like that. With the Saudi Arabia 1994. Very rare it would be like, oh, feel good story about Saudi Arabia. But in 94, this guy runs the pitch. It's incredible. It's like, where did this come from? Where did this guy come from? It's spirited, this like energy against Saudi Argentina.
Arabian, press solidarity, the Saudi Arabian people are, football.
We will probably do it on the buffet at the end of the World Cup tournament. We should do a list of players and where they would end up on a transfer after the World Cup if football wasn't so global now.
Yeah, like, the El Hadj Diouf World Cup barometer. Like, El Hadj Diouf gets a career off the back of the 2002 World Cup of Senegal.
James Rodriguez, it's still amazing that
2014.
Like, it was still happening then.
The only thing with James, I suppose, is he was at like Monaco and was a young, talented player, but then just, I know what you mean, but I just think it's crazy in 2026 that we're still having players that we have no idea who they are. Mm. And hopefully that doesn't make us sound like, you know, we don't watch football, but which probably does, but that these players are just coming out of nowhere. You know, that no one really knows a whole lot about. Like Hassan, I was looking into him last night. He played on a few underage games for France when he was young, obviously, and he's at Real Oviedo. Didn't set the world alight last year. Mm. He's in his mid-20s, I think, now at this stage. Like, it's crazy. It was the same, it was a Sepenga on the wing for DR Congo against England, and he was running Jed Spence ragged. It's like, this guy's playing the second division in Spain. It's great.
And at the same time, in all these cool World Cup moments, have you ever had less appetite for transfer news? Because the aforementioned Jed Spence is reportedly going to Everton.
Yeah.
And you see that yesterday, and there's a bit of a shrug, and John Stone's going to Juventus, and you're like, oh yeah, club football. You know, you're never less interested in club football than when, like, the romance of a major tournament takes
Sky Sports News
summer love.
Manchester United pictures, and, you know, they're slowly
United low-key
back in preparation for England going out.
Yeah, United, like, United kind of low-key not doing very much, Spurs doing a lot. And it's very much on the side. This is also happening.
But, like, the Spurs thing is truly remarkable.
It's wild.
After 2 decades of spending no money, they've become the biggest spenders in world football.
I think they got 2 massive frights in a row and they have to do something third time. I'm just watching this back again, the 2 Egypt calls. So the Salah one is like, that would have been soft enough, I think. And the McAllister one is the angle that they're given is quite far away, so I just can't tell.
It's just that though. It's
the little kick after
is just unnecessary.
This is the threshold for penalties though. I just don't know if that's enough to give a penalty.
Yeah, no, you're right. But see, the problem is that the consequence is the goal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if it is further out the pitch, they might say, right, we'll avoid fuss here and we'll disallow the goal and there's no great consequence because Egypt don't have a penalty to go and win the game in the 90 whatever minute.
Are people just upset about it or do they legitimately think that there's something wrong? That's what I want to know, because the consequences is the thing, but the Egypt one was a foul. That was kind of unambiguous. Yeah, yeah. The Salah one I would debate.
Yeah. I don't know why people would be particularly upset about it though either. Like, it just...
Because it would have been a great story. It would have been amazing, Egypt going through. Because it was an underdog going through. True. And the champions would have been eliminated and it would have been an incredible story. Yeah. Ronaldo and Messi out back to back.
Yeah.
Oh, like, the narrative was there to be had. And everyone knew as soon as Argentina got one back, was like, this is going to be the end. They needed everything they could get to help them.
Yeah.
Narratives are being formed online about this World Cup, though. And there's actually some legitimate kind of stories that'll probably come out after the World Cup in terms of who's forming these narratives, because now you get paid on Twitter to start churning out a story and changing what we want to see. There's stories of creators who are blue techs who are getting paid by PR firms to set a certain narrative about this World Cup, and you're definitely starting to see trends in multiple pages posting very similar things about very similar incidents to try rise up the controversy around this World Cup. So
the only thing about that is, Ryan, it's a fair point, like, and it is true, 100% is true, but Infantino, FIFA, Trump, they're helping the kind of validity behind these theories based off of the fact that they're just making it up as they go along. Yeah. And it gets to a point where nothing would surprise you.
Exactly.
Do you just know?
Because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yeah, and exactly. So it's... Yeah, I just wanted to see the tournament play out as
well as an example.
But what's going to happen is the fact now that you've got five Argentinian officials on the France Morocco game, and you know, no matter what happens in that game, you're going to get some aggrieved people.
But they're going to go out of their way to be on their best behaviour, aren't they? Because they'll be smart enough to know that people will be looking.
It's too obvious. It's too obvious, yeah.
But they reached a certain point to say, I was like, you know, you're on your own now, lads. We did our bit.
You're often harshest on your own, like, so there's a lot to be said for having a referee from your own country and win the task.
Yeah, yeah.
See how they ref you then.
And there was three French officials as well to flag on the Argentina game last night. Two Norwegian blokes as well.
I think that's just an own goal. Like, that's a completely avoidable controversy around the World Cup. But
who's winning the World Cup?
Ask me after the France-Morocco game.
Yeah, it's France for now, right? Like, France have been the outstanding team, have come through their difficult part. But other than that, what?
Do you find it tough?
Yeah, I do. I think... I think France are the best team. I don't know how they win it, though.
Nobody can convince anyone beyond France. Possibly Argentina, maybe France. Nobody's saying England?
I wouldn't.
Are people saying Spain?
That's kind of why I'm laughing. I don't know. I think England have a chance, all right, yeah.
Spain all the way. Says Spain, Donahue on YouTube.
Yeah, the Spain-France game would be fascinating because it's like a total mismatch of styles. It's like who comes out on top there when Spain tried to keep all the ball and France tried to just kill them. It's like, who knows? Mm-hmm. Who wins that?
My hopes of Spain were dented by that Portugal game.
Really?
They were so blunt.
Yeah, but they did ultimately prevail.
They did.
Against the top nation.
I wouldn't rule out Norway against England.
No,
Erling Haaland against that defence.
I was really hoping it was going to be a Norway, Egypt semi.
Were you?
Yeah, that would have been class, wouldn't it?
And then a Belgium. Morocco.
So sorry, who are we ruling out? Belgium?
As far as winning the tournament goes.
Yeah, because now we've named like six.
As far as winning the tournament goes.
France. France, right?
Yeah.
And after that, if you beat France, you're going to win, I think.
I think you're probably right there. I think if you would have to say that they're the team. It would be easy to say whoever beats France wins it, because that would then mean that.
Who's the last underdog nation to win a World Cup? Look at the last winners. They're all major nations. Defending champions Argentina, 2018 France, 2014 Germany, 2010 Spain.
Underdog nations don't win the World Cup.
2006 Italy.
Doesn't
2002
happen.
Brazil.
Like, you know, that Italian team, no one really expects them to do stuff. And that German team weren't.
Germany.
You know what I mean?
I know
what you're saying. But
that was a coming of age story for Germany. They weren't really the favourites.
Yeah, but they had quality players. I don't believe Morocco believed that they could win this whole thing.
What would be the underdog? What would be classified as an underdog nation? Who's not an underdog nation here? So Spain... France, England,
no surprise.
Argentina.
Switzerland, no,
I think,
Morocco.
I think England is still a surprise.
I think if Norway, Switzerland, and Morocco go.
Absolutely ridiculous if Norway, Morocco, or Switzerland win it. Belgium, yeah, it would be, and England would be in that category. The rest, like Spain, Argentina, France, win the batting eyelids. You'd move on to the next World Cup.
That Michael, I'd be with Michael on this. An underdog nation has never won the World Cup. It doesn't happen, like, do you know.
At the very start, maybe Uruguay, but they were Olympic champions.
Well, and it was like four teams.
Even I'd say Croatia is the biggest wild card to reach a final. Even then. Mm. Even finals are matched by top nations.
Yeah. I do think with Morocco, though, they have
the
type of players who can... You need to be able to play multiple styles of football to win a World Cup. And I do think Morocco have that in their locker. They can lock the game up if they need to. They can be expansive if they need to. They're going to need that against France, certainly in different ways. Against Spain, they'll need to be a little bit more expansive if they get through that game.
Yeah.
You know, like they do have the ability to do it.
People have thoughts about this. Like DK's in saying Norway's defence is not strong enough to knock out England. Carter's back saying, I would love nothing more than France to absolutely whoop Argentina.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting to that myself. I do I just find a lot of their players outside of Messi just very insufferable. A lot of them, I think. And that's not a...
Before they won the World Cup, you were like, oh, I want them to do it. Yeah, now they've done it, you're like...
Bleh. Yeah, yeah. There was even points during the run where I was kind of like, oh, like, I'm trying to like you. But I remember that the Netherlands game was crazy work. Like, I remember after that game going, oh my
4 years
God.
Ago.
Yeah, like the Paredes booting the ball to the bench. I was like, oh, some of these guys are thugs. But
They got the reputation of angels with dirty faces for a reason, you know? That's Argentinian football.
Yeah.
Beautiful, fantastic players mixed with absolute hatchet men.
Why were they so bad against Egypt? Why did they go 2-0 down?
Because they're not that great.
That's the problem, is it?
Yeah.
Like, they have a midfield that should be able to control games, but who can't?
Yeah, but
you see, Cesar Fernandez,
loads of nations.
Like a 10 hiding as an 8.
Six. I thought that's what he was at the last World Cup when he scored. He scored that whirly against Mexico when they were on the verge of being dumped out. And he's funny, we were talking about the players who make a name for themselves at the World Cup. Like, obviously he was a talented player, was well known, but I mean, he got a 100-odd million move to Chelsea off the back of the World Cup as a player who was scoring goals and getting in the box and creating. I'm not sure he's got the legs to be an elite level 8, you know.
Yeah, so he should maybe cash in the money back.
On just a final point on Argentina, Lautaro Martinez, he's the reason they weren't very good.
He didn't
start the game. He comes on, the game completely flips on his head. Argentina start dominant. Argentina were trying to play this. Lautaro Martinez should be starting.
Okay. I was like,
he's the reason.
That was a tease.
I loathe to give him any credit, because every time I watch him, he has been terrible. But he's genuinely brilliant for Argentina.
I would think that too. That he under delivers when he starts, and you've got to kick up the ass there, and you're not starting much better when he comes in.
But it just unlocks Messi, because you can't, the way that Messi plays, you can't really play him up front with Alvarez and expect him to do anything. Whereas if you play two up front with Martinez and Alvarez, it lets Messi drop into the pockets that he needs to. So you need to drop either Rodrigo de Paul or McAllister.
So Scaloni does that, and you'd say Martinez didn't really do that with Portugal, but they're doing the same thing. Argentina are still building around Messi. Was a good friend of the show, Rory Larmour, made the salient point watching the first half yesterday, saying that Argentina are unbelievably narrow because your man is the magnet for the ball.
Yeah.
So they actually don't develop. So to your point about bringing Lautaro Martinez on, game changes, but it has to change because they're behind. They almost need to go behind Argentina. They're just a weird kind of reactive, emotional team.
There's two things with that as well, in that the last World Cup it worked with Julian Alvarez, because it was again, he emerged too as this guy, but he was scoring goals too, which he hasn't really been doing at this one. But I think the difference when Martinez comes on as well is that he stretches the pitch massively. Like, he goes in behind, he makes those runs. He's not coming deep in the same way that Alvarez does, and that then in turn leaves a bit of space for Messi. I think Martinez has actually been a good bit better than Alvarez has this tournament. I know he's not 100% fit, but considering the season that Alvarez has had, I think he's been pretty disappointing. But as well as that,
he's the one big name who hasn't showed up, considering that there's talk of him being the most expensive player in the world.
Yamal to a degree as well, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did just turn up. The legs in the midfield are crucial as well, because in the way that I saw someone say this, I'm not claiming this to my own, but I thought it was so eloquently put, that Ronaldo, or Portugal, had built a team, and you know, you don't have to bring Ronaldo into every conversation about Messi and Messi into every conversation about Ronaldo, but it's relevant for this reason, is that Portugal have built a team around Ronaldo, not a team to complement Ronaldo, and Argentina have done both, but more so a team that complements Messi, I think.
Fair enough. Is it not just that Messi is a more adaptable, better player than Ronaldo, and so he'll fit in a bit more? Because he goes deeper and he plays as a midfielder, essentially.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But there's probably a way in which Portugal can, look at the fact that Ronaldo is this guy that you need to put crosses into and win headers and blah, blah. Anyway, we're not getting back into that again. Messi definitely unlocked the... Yeah, I'm not biting again. Unlocked
5 minutes later.
He unlocked himself a bit more when he went out to the right hand side, anyway, the last 10 minutes or so. And he was delivering balls in and taking men on. And
yeah.
He got his just reward.
Do Do you have a game of the tournament contender so far? I just have a half of the tournament. That was the most enjoyable half I've watched in a long time. In terms of the looking at phone test, didn't glance at it once. Watched the game entirely. Yeah. Kids running around, kind of the odd glance here and there.
What stage was the tennis at?
No, it's Argentina now, lads.
Oh, true.
Hold your judgment.
It started.
It was after.
It was 5 hours. Finishes.
I didn't sit down for 5 1/4 hours watching tennis.
All right, okay.
You know, that's not possible for me these days. Yeah, yeah. But I watched a good chunk of the game. I was there, you know. Yeah, I set out Colombia to watch Djokovic. But it was amazing. Like, people might have missed it. But it's the longest ever quarterfinal in Wimbledon history. 5 1/4 hours. And Djokovic is now the oldest semi-finalist in over 50 years. The match, despite there being a roof and lights, it was actually 6 minutes away from the curfew.
11 o'clock.
That's how late it went, yeah. And thank God for the final set tiebreak now. Because after Wimbledon famously went 70-68 in the final set between Is There a Mahou? All those years ago, they changed it up to 10 in the tiebreak. It's remarkable. It's probably great news for Jannik Sinner because it's Sinner Djokovic in the semi final. So Djokovic is wrecked now.
And he was much earlier, straight sets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Game of tournament's a good question, though.
Yeah. Sorry, going back to that, yeah. I just love that half so much, Argentina, Egypt. It was like, I was only thinking watching it that. Like, how often did we spend last season about the Premier League? Like, we had Vinnie Perton here who fell asleep watching Liverpool, Arsenal and Anfield. And it felt like there was so much drudgery. Now, there's not, like, the Premier League happens all the time, every day, it feels like. So you get too used to it. If the World Cup is on all the time, you get too used to it. But there is something about this, and something about that half particularly.
Yeah.
It was just you don't get too romantic about it, but like, that's the reason you love football. It was like those things. It was like, it was the underdogs taking on superior players on paper and being more skillful than them all of a sudden. Like, where did that come from?
Probably not in terms of like the quality that we've seen in these games, but I thought Cape Verde, Argentina, for sheer drama, was fantastic. And then also in similar vein, DR Congo against England.
So yeah,
for large parts of that game, they were brilliant. So
I think international football definitely takes on life its own, and it's always different to club football. But I don't think this World Cup could have validated those conversations we were having during the Premier League more, because it just showed like you can play exciting football and have a good result.
It almost helps that not every game is like that, because the match after was a stinker.
Yeah,
Switzerland-Colombia.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But that actually that makes the Argentina game even better.
Yeah.
In a weird way, you know. I almost had no interest in watching the Colombia game because of how much I loved that second half of the Argentina one.
I have to say,
I can't say
that would have been a great decision.
Yeah. I have to say the, and I don't know, is this maybe because like I woke up like 2 minutes into the game to watch it, but I don't think I've ever seen that like England Mexico the other night. It was like ridiculous. It was just ridiculous. It just had everything.
I heard Barney Rene and Barry Glendening having a right argument about that. That Barney Rene thinks it's one of the greatest English achievements ever to do what they did, because at the Azteca Stadium, Mexico are incredible. Was it like 2 from 86 defeats or whatever it was? They have an unbelievable record there. Altitude, and England going down to 10 men. And they got by, and Barry just says, they just got through, Barney. They just scraped by.
Yeah,
and there was a massive back and forth about it.
Do they ever learn?
But either way, but like Barney is not like this like jingoistic type English. But he's not like he was just saying he thinks it was like an incredible achievement. But the excitement of the game was unbelievable.
Do you know what?
That's what I mean. As an entertainment product, like you had red cards, you had penalties, you had swings, you had an outrageous atmosphere, you had a storm going on, you had the
home side of the World Cup.
Home side,
it was an away game.
It battened down the hatches. The only thing that took away from it is that Mexico were just a bit of a disgrace for the last half an hour, and that they looked like they hadn't a bleeding clue what to do.
But the one thing that takes away from it is you look at the Mexico team and it's like it's average.
To the point about it being an all-time great achievement, it's only an all-time great achievement if England go on and do something.
Yes. He didn't say all-time great achievement. He just said it was an amazing achievement.
Yeah. But they're all saying it's like the
greatest away victory of all time. Yeah,
and like in terms of World Cup moments, it's right up there with anything that's happened.
But okay, like, so to go back to Wimbledon, they say if you break a player, you only break the player if you hold serve.
Yeah,
that's what they say, right? But when you break the player in the moment, there's that adrenaline rush.
Sure.
And that's what England Mexico has. It's just that moment.
Which wears off.
Egypt had that moment yesterday.
Unless they back it up.
Yeah, it's the exact thing you don't want to have in sport. Roy Keane was giving out to Gary Neville and Ian Wright about this. England get too high on the highs and they get too lows on the lows. They're far too critical when they don't play particularly well, but maybe you like, say, a draw. Incredibly harsh on the team. Now, then they go and do that, and suddenly it's one of their greatest achievements. They get far too caught up in the emotions of the World Cup.
I don't know if they'll learn. Like they're a Norway game away from another Root and Branch review, which would be absurd, really. And it was like, oh, why didn't he pick his creative players?
Like, I'd love to ask Barney what he thinks of this being a massive result if they go out to Norway.
England are not unique. Brazil are having that exact conversation. I went off the ball breakfast in Rio about where's all this going. Tim Vickery was on there saying like they don't really develop players anymore. They develop players only to sell to Europe, so they make defensive midfielders and big physical units. So they don't develop fullbacks and they don't develop creative central midfielders.
The thing with Brazil is that this has been going on for a quarter of a century now. And, you know, they have had moments in between. But I think there is just a thing in football. I don't know how you get around it, but I think Brazil might have just had their time. And their time might come again. But
I'd say their time is coming again. So if you look at the amount of money that's going into the Brazilian league, players are actually coming over, a load of players are coming over later. So you still had those 16, 17, 18-year-olds who were coming over for massive money to Europe. But there's now way more players of a slightly older age and better players playing in Brazil because there's been an influx of money there that probably hasn't washed through the system just yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
you're probably right. Yeah, you're probably right. And I think there's the thing in Brazil as well. It's such a cultural, there's such an identity that they probably have maybe stuck with too much to their detriment at this point. You don't want them to lose that because a lot of people fell in love with football off the back of those Brazilian games in the 80s and 90s. But
yeah, like I think people of a certain age, like maybe my age and a little bit older, it's like they really love the France 98 squad, even though they lost the final compared to the 2002 squad, which won it, but that was probably seen as a poor tournament. That was kind of Ronaldo's tournament. Since 2002, like 2006, they went in with Ronaldinho, Kaká, Ronaldo. Was Adriano on the squad then? Anyway, they had a load of Galacticos essentially, and they completely flattered to deceive. They got the beat by France, Carlos, didn't they?
Yeah,
2010 rubbish.
But
2014, they got obliterated by Germany.
It required one of the all-time great World Cup performances from Zidane to knock them out.
He was very good in the first half. That was a slightly overblown performance. Well, he was very good in the first half.
Yeah, okay.
But he was very good.
That's what happens.
He was very good.
You only need to play a half in a World Cup.
They've
underperformed.
In 2010, they went out to the Dutch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Schneider scored a goal in that game, and it was like, they should have won that game.
I'm holding to the standards of Brazil.
Yeah, sure. But I think that's probably something that's not done them any favours either. That they have got a team now that isn't what they used to have, but they still view them as a team that should be achieving what those teams of the past have done. And it's important to keep your standards high, for sure.
It's also possible that Carlo Ancelotti isn't a brilliant international manager.
Yeah, true.
Absolutely. Right.
This has just changed all of a sudden after the Norway game. Before the Norway game, this could be the greatest manager of all time.
I think there'd been just a few bits where he brought Neymar back, for example, where everybody's like, this isn't going to end well, is it?
So why do you think he brought Neymar in? I know we have to move on. What do you think?
Well, maybe he was instructed to do so by the sponsors in the Brazilian Federation.
Did you think Ancelotti would listen to that?
I think if Carlo does what Carlo's told, he was the perfect Florentino Perez manager.
Yeah,
we're going to sign all these players, and I'll make that work. You got to play Neymar.
People talk about Ancelotti as this great manager, and was like, well, maybe he's just really good at getting people on side.
Yeah, and so there's greatness in that.
It's a totally appreciated.
But I don't think he's standing on the table saying, I'm not taking this job if you make me take Neymar. He's like,
I presume the only reason he brings Neymar on for the last, what did he play? Good sizable chunk of that game he came on, 20 minutes, right? Because prove to everyone that you still have it. Be the match winner that we know you can be. That we saw like in that 2020 Champions League run where PSG get to the final and he's excellent in that tournament. Or even a 2014 World Cup before the injury. Well, you're talking half a decade.
Many injuries and many parties and whatever else has gone on in his life since. Anyway, you want to move on?
So we've got All-Ireland semi-finals this weekend.
Yeah.
Got Dublin against Kerry. We've got Louth against Mayo. And unfortunately, Mayo fans, it's all over after this.
Roll it there, Roisin.
Dear colleagues, welcome, Taoiseach. As my member state has been paired with County Mayo during your presidency, I have to start by congratulating Mayo for reaching the semi-finals at the expense of your very own Cork. Mayo for Sam. On a more serious note...
What's the context there, Enda?
Yeah, why did you say that?
He was speaking to Micheál Martin in the European Parliament yesterday. That was Juran Liners from Netherlands. So... Unfortunately, the Mayo curse will roll on after that.
Was he trolling Micheál Martin? Same Mayo for Sam. After Mayo knocked out Cork.
Yeah. It was like a, you know, showing great awareness of our domestic sports, which obviously if we didn't play, we'd be world champions at everything.
Mm. You saw Micheál Martin at the Jones's Road.
Last week?
Yeah. Wasn't talking, I just walked by him. Not really having much else
cool
to
story,
add.
Cool story, bro.
No, it is one of them, absolutely.
Was anybody giving him pelters?
Not that I noticed.
And fairness, he's amongst his own, isn't he?
Yeah, true enough, yeah. Yeah, of course, his son is a sub-goalkeeper now for,
I know, that's,
for Cork, yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why they lost, isn't it?
Oh, well, he was starting at other times, that didn't go well either. Mm. I just think it's funny that
Tishak's
son's an intercounty
It's kind of funny, yeah.
It was funny. Do you think Mayo will win, Sam?
No.
No, they're favourite.
No, it would actually be a ridiculous achievement way ahead of schedule. Because they have to be a very good outside and then one of the greats.
Yeah, they have an opportunity the weekend. I'd slightly favour Loud, but again, it's a big occasion. So it's a big occasion for them all. This isn't, you know, a Mayo team that's littered with guys who've been there and done that. There's still a couple of guys there, obviously, of course, who are still hanging around. But it would take a monumental. It's mad. I think they're probably. Start of the season, if you'd have told Andy Moran that Mayo would be in an All-Ireland semi-final, even take away the fact that they're playing Louth, I think he would have. Would have taken your hand off for sure, like, especially after how the league ended and how the loss to Roscommon went in the Connacht Championship. So.
Instinct says Louth, Kerry.
Yeah. I tend to agree.
Any arguments? There's something about Dublin Dáil and Croagh Park and.
I think
rising to that occasion Kerry.
I think that there's also. There's enough in the Mayo team who have been there before that they're going to have to hold their nerve at some point. That'll be fine. Now it's not bonus territory. Now it's like, oh shit, we're going to play an All-Ireland final if we can do this. Just two different approaches to the big story from Ger Brennan in the papers 2 days ago saying, sure, look, pressure's all on Kerry. Kerry boss O'Connor blocks down Dubs' pressure play. Jack O'Connor has said his Dublin counterpart Ger Brennan is playing the game with his comment that the pressure's on Kerry, the champions, going into Sunday's All-Ireland semi-final. The nub of the Dublin manager's point was that all the pressure's on the kingdom because of Jack's experience with Jack likened to Mick O'Dwyer. Brennan said the experience they have, the medals and silverware they brought about as a management team, it just takes a lot of pressure off us. We're only finding our feet. And similarly, Kerry are defending champions. O'Connor shot a wry smile when told the comments. Good man, Ger. Sure, there's pressure on Kerry every day. There's always pressure on Kerry. Ger is playing the game, I presume. Dara O'Shea in the Irish Times today. It's not mind games for Brennan to claim that all the pressure's on Kerry. He's right. He's like basically saying that there's pressure on Kerry always.
There's never not been.
In the end, I see a Kerry win by 3 or 4 points, but would I be shocked if Dublin turned out to be this year's Kerry? Definitely not.
This year's Kerry?
As in the team who come and decide that they're the best team in the country at Croke Park from quarterfinal stage on.
Yeah. I think the pressure would... I don't think Ger Brennan's playing any games, personally. I think he's... He said it probably for a reason, but I don't think it's untrue.
No, but you're talking about the two gated football counties in history who deal with pressure best. Jack Kerry and Dublin, who are used to, who wear the tags of favourites well, are better than any other body that can do it.
Yeah,
better than anybody else.
Yeah.
And now, but you would say objectively, Kerry are much further along than is Dublin.
Yeah.
But like Jack has yet to go back to back. It's a big thing for him, maybe. You know, isn't it amazing? Jack O'Connor last year, the evening of the All Ireland final victory, says, "I'm probably going to step away. It's time for someone else."
Yeah,
and he has that time to think. And I'd love to know his motivation. Maybe it's as pure as love of the game, just want to keep going. You'll be a long time gone and all that, so manage while you can. Or was it? Do you know what I'd love to do, and I've never done. Now we'll never know that. I don't think Jack O'Connor's the type to reveal that much about himself that he will tell you if that's a motivation.
He'll tell Tony Lean in the off season if they win. He will. That's what'll happen.
And the thing is that Kerry people won't like hearing it, like, but they should win this. They should win the whole thing now.
Yeah, they should.
And they don't like that. And I understand why that is the case, because it's not like they're playing nobody. But they should still be better.
Yeah, but again, trying to put a time on it, maybe 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, you wouldn't call Dublin a nobody, but if they weren't called Dublin, they would be exactly that.
Oh, they'd be massive underdogs. Yeah. They're only 3-point underdogs heading into this. But if they were anybody else with the profile who had struggled over Wicklow in Ockham, and then been beaten back to back in two games, and you know, been hammered in extra time as it was
at Croke Park twice, both times.
You'd be like, no, this team haven't got a chance. But then you look around and they've got $100 Ireland medals in the panel, and
they decided to start playing ball.
You know,
kicking twos, laugh. It's mad, like, you know, we all thought they obviously aren't able to kick the two pointers because they're not trying. But now they just are. You know, Niall Scully kicked two the last day.
Yeah.
And Paddy Small kicked one as well early on. Colly Baskell's got a boot on him.
He does. Now, they all need to show up and have a 9 out of 10 performance to beat this Kerry side.
Yeah. Kerry, Kerry forward line, oh my God. Yeah.
Kerry.
There's a way of keeping David Clifford quiet. Has been done.
Donegal did a reasonable job on it.
You'll get his genius will slip out once or twice, but that's manageable in the context of the game, right?
Yeah.
You need about three or four. Yeah, three or four outstanding Dublin performances, which is very possible. Very possible.
I'd say you probably need 9, to be honest.
Do you think so? I would talk extraordinary. Like Niall Scully, they'll need more than what Niall Scully did against Galway to beat this version of Kerry.
Mm.
But I don't think. That's impossible if they do that. If they have three or four and then, like, say, 12 really good performances, really focused ones, and then three or four to stand out. I think Kerry will win. I think it'll be Kerry Mayo, but I think Kerry will win.
You wouldn't be surprised at all to see Kerry land someone in on Niall Scully there and just say, you just stick on him, because
that's kind of what Sean Bowen was saying yesterday.
Yeah, I think that would be a logical thing to do, because it would limit an awful lot of what has been good about Dublin over the course of the last few weeks. Now, I'd be surprised if Dublin haven't considered that possibility and have some form of plan around it, but at the same time, the one thing as well is Kerry's kick-out has been absolutely ridiculous, and the fact that Shane Murphy is slotted in there for Shane Ryan, and they look as good.
Yeah, so to make the case for what goes wrong for Kerry, the kick-out falls apart because there's much bigger pressure.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't even be talking about that possibility if the first choice keeper wasn't injured for the year. There has been a disaster for Kerry in Croke Park in the league final.
Yeah.
Like, absolute unmitigated disaster. You know, the goalkeeper looked too small.
Yeah.
They were chipping him on his own when he was on the line. And it's like, well, can Con do that? Con can do that. So Con goes mad, scores 2-4 from play, which is totally believable.
Yeah.
Darren McCurry just scored that amount in 20 minutes against this team.
Yeah.
Like, all Con has to do is match Darren McCurry over the course of the game, except do it at key moments and score a couple of goals that makes the Hill be suddenly feverish. And if David Clifford's radar is off like it was when they played in the All-Ireland final that time, all of a sudden, it's game on. That's my... where you're making a case for the Dubs. They get some kind of vague parity at midfield because O'Cuffick Byrne has the greatest game of his life. He's one of the 9 out of 10s. And away you go.
Yeah, if they press up on that kick out and make them go long, then I know Padder or Kofik Byrne is well able to compete with anyone around the middle. I don't think the Kerry midfield too, they were good. I don't think they were at their best against Tyrone.
No. The one caveat, you're right, they weren't. The one caveat to that is Tyrone, I think, are the only other midfield
that has the ballers
to play him. But.
Yeah. Kilpatrick and Kendi,
I still think there's more from Joe O'Connor, but is he going to get to the level he was at last year? I'm not sure. Is Paddy going to get to the level he was at last year? I'm not sure. Is Sean O'Shea going to have an impact on the game as a sub? I'm not sure. They're the big question marks, and they have to come and answer them. And look, obviously they're Kerry, they always answer them at some point. Maybe not this year, next year they'll come back and beat everybody with 20 points, go, we told you. But you know, show me on Sunday.
I think Kobe would look at his contract if they went all the way.
No, I think it hastens his departure. It's like,
I actually think it would decrease the likelihood of him ever returning.
So on that note, if they heartbreakingly lost another final, I would thought he'd be quicker to leave then.
I think there's more of a Ty Kennelly chance of him coming back in a couple of years if they do heartbreakingly lose. But like, look, by all accounts, the contract is
I know. I'm just talking about the feeling in his heart when the final whistle goes. If the ultimate occurs.
I overheard some chatter from the Mayo fans at the game the last day in Croker. I don't know how public knowledge this is or whatever, if it's even true, but there was talk, I think they were saying, about family moving over as well.
I think that's...
And it being a big thing.
Is that known?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would indicate that there's very little chance of him...
Or that it's like a 5-year thing and everybody goes for 5 years and you go and you have your crack and you come back for a couple of years and then you come back.
Unbelievably young.
That's it.
This is not terminal.
No, you could definitely see a scenario where he's like, dominant in Aussie Rules and goes, yeah, and so it's fine. Or he's grand in Aussie Rules and goes, actually, that's good. I did my bit. I see what that's like.
Yeah, because there's been some exceptionally talented athletes, let alone footballers, go over and in the AFL and not really make a mark. Not to doubt him. I'm sure he will. That catch he had at one stage in that Cork game was ridiculous. He almost caught his head. Like,
yeah, he was practicing for his new life. Like, Mayo don't want the Zach Toohey situation here, like where, you know, Zach Toohey comes home every so often, and I think he does a bit of training in Portlaoise when he comes home.
Or plays for the odd
time, quietly. I don't know if Mayo want that because Zach Toohey loves Australian life so much, like, because there is a lot of attraction over there. There's a lot to stay over there for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The forward line as well, like the Mayo forwards the last day, I think it was stats something like Ryan O'Donoghue, Darabern, and Kobe had scored 19 of their whatever 20 was it 20 what they scored 23 in the end or something, was it maybe?
And
obviously Tommy Connery contributed a little bit coming off the bench as well, so Loud will know that, will be aware of that.
You're making them favourites,
Loud. I don't know if I would make them favourites, but I think they'll win, do you know, that kind of way. I suppose that does make them favourites in my head, really, doesn't it? That's probably exactly what favourites are, but I don't know if they'll be viewing in their own head as, they'll view this as an opportunity to be like, okay, we're playing Mayo, we think we're as good as Mayo.
Yeah.
But the pedigree, it does mean something, whether we want to believe that or not. Like, I think there's an intangible kind of thing there as far as mentality goes, and that Mayo know how to do it in Croke Park, at least until the final. And I think that midfield, the midfield kind of eight of Loud is it will probably have a little bit too much for Mayo. There's a lot of big men around there.
Imagine what they might be able to do with 15 men on the bench.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, they channeled the spirit or avoid the trauma 5 years ago, Mayo. So 2021 is their big vanquishing in the semi-final, and then everyone's waiting for the coronation in the final. Now, the only thing is that's against Tyrone. They have the Tyrone equivalent, let's say, this time around the semi-final. It's the reversing of it, and then they wait for the big boys in the final, but we know what happens with them in the big boys. It's a different generation, though.
It is. Fearlessness there, yeah. Especially with the lads up top, they mentioned there, Darburn and Kobe. These guys have no scar tissue.
No. Will I read out a few comments that we're getting this morning across a variety of sports? You can imagine the two most prominent things are about the Argentina game and Wimbledon, actually, funny enough. Well done, Djokovic. Possibly, the greatest sports person of all time, says the Gaelgor. I don't know if he's trolling. He didn't add the joy. I personalised the comments to you. It was just a general statement of that. Hope Djokovic beats Sinner. Hope Sinner beats Djokovic. And then we're talking about Messi.
So long as somebody beats Berev, I don't care.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair
enough. Actually, whatever the sins of everybody else, anybody but Berev.
Yeah, it's a bit sickening the way he's treated within the game.
It's absolutely mad. I don't understand why people don't bring it up constantly.
I think tennis are absolutely appalling.
There are significant and multiple accusations of domestic abuse against this player.
Yeah,
it should not be spoken about every time.
And
why are the crowd not booing him?
I don't know. I don't know if there's an ignorance to it that people genuinely don't know and they just casually follow tennis, or if they have forgiven him and accept that he claims he's innocent. And they accept the fact that he said that.
I keep meaning to say this. Ali McCoy's got pelters.
Yeah, for the
I think he knew exactly what he was doing. And I'm almost certain that everybody was told, when this happens, you do not mention it in the broadcast. You are not allowed to explain that. We are staying away from it. Sport is sport and everything outside of sport. And that's a very significant attitude, particularly in the UK. I bet you $100 million that I don't have, that Ali McCoy knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
Because he was drawing attention to it in a way that he's not going to get in trouble for, or that he's going to get in a bit of trouble for. But what are they? You can imagine me something I didn't know.
I hadn't thought about that.
He went too far the other way, didn't he? Because he said, I don't know what they're booing him for.
Yeah, exactly. But sure, of course he did.
Yeah, but it's
like Thierry Henry going, in case you can't tell, I'm being sarcastic.
Do you think? I didn't get any tone of that from him at all.
No, but you're not supposed to get the tone.
I know.
That's the point. Maybe I'm completely insane and he literally didn't know this really famous story that he covers football week in, week out for TalkSport and ITV that has been rumbling on for years and years and years and years, and every time Arsenal play there's chance from the opposition for the last number of years. You're telling me Ali McCoy has been a co-com in the ground, hasn't gone, what's that about? What's that? What are they singing? I can hear what they're singing. Are we serious that, like,
I hadn't thought about it.
He's such a happy chappy that he didn't actually know the biggest story in or surrounding Arsenal.
Okay, fair enough.
And you, that, okay. And you think that's his way of protesting it?
They were all told. I'm telling you, they were told.
And this is their way of rebelling in their own secret way. I don't know what they could possibly be booing him for.
Maybe, well, maybe some big news there. What are they booing him for? Good man, Annie. Fair play. And like, oh, what an idiot. How dumb is he? Doesn't know anything. I'm like, all right, fair enough, yeah.
And, but you couldn't label the same of the tennis world when it comes to Zverev.
They all know. They all know.
When he's playing the guy he beat in the French Open final today in the quarterfinal at Wimbledon, the Italian.
He hockeyed him.
Flavio Cobolli, yeah. And Cobolli afterwards, but it is the tennis culture in post-match interviews to praise your opponent. Probably over the top. Mm. Anyway. Yeah, but Zverev continues, you know, the tennis don't know how to deal with it. This all came out in 2020 and they had no domestic abuse policy. Nick Kyrgios is the same. Kyrgios, during his run, actually, in 2022, when he got to the final of Wimbledon, same thing came out. Kind of silence. Tennis doesn't really want to deal with it. This is an awkward conversation. Just want to stick to the tennis. And you see that sport in large, you know. Cristiano Ronaldo has his own accusation labelled against him. Not really mentioned that much. I think there was a protest today. He re-signed for United and made his second debut against Newcastle. There was a plane flew over Old Trafford in sympathy with the,
oh, really?
The woman who claimed what happened, and it's just a shrug of the shoulders, booze. There's loads of it happens, you know, to the point where you become immune to the fact that these people are accepted.
Yeah.
And Kasparov will consistently say, I'm innocent, I didn't do anything.
Yeah. We have a tolerance for domestic abuse, which we shouldn't have.
Yeah. You get desensitized by it, I think, as well.
And then the feel-good story of Arthur Ferry as well, the Brit. You remember the Brit?
Well, sorry, what was the crack here? Your man, I saw, went up to the, what you call him, the umpire, referee?
Yeah.
And he was like, what's all this about? He keeps hitting the net and he's not saying sorry.
Oh, yeah. I didn't
he's
think
not saying sorry.
About,
where's the sportsmanship?
Yeah, this is tennis again. So, insular, right? So you have to kind of apologise if you get a let card. So if you hit the ball, hits the net and goes over, you win the point. Anyway, it's an apology.
Yeah.
None of them mean it, which they have said.
It's like snooker when you kind of put the wrong ball and it goes in.
Yeah.
And like you kind of tap the table or whatever.
The whole point about an unwritten rule is that it's unwritten and you don't have to do it.
Yeah. I thought I got a good laugh out of someone in the crowd did like the in-betweeners. Sorry. I'm sorry. It was good. Because to me, that is like, again, like it's maybe it's etiquette or whatever. But man, what are you doing? Going up to the umpire, he's not saying sorry to me.
What
are we doing here?
They also closed the roof prematurely last night. Djokovic wasn't happy. So this is an outdoor tournament and they closed the roof 3/4 of an hour earlier than they had done the previous night.
Ah.
So he was unhappy. So today, the quarterfinal of the men's, you got Taylor Fritz, the American, against your man Zverev, and then you got Cobolli against Ferry. And then on the women's side of it, it's wide open, as it always is, the women's side, Wimbledon. Noskova against Mertens, and then Kostyuk against Paolini, who got to the final actually 2 years ago. So Coco Gauff got through yesterday. She's against Caroline Mukova in the first semi-final on Thursday. And then the other semi-final, let's confirm, the men's is Djokovic.
So you were talking about Ferry.
Yeah, sorry, Ferry. So this is the Brit. If you missed it 2 days ago, we were talking, he beat Grigor Dimitrov in 5 sets. It was a great achievement. So he's only a young fella. I think he's 23. Lives around Wimbledon, from
and
around there.
His dad owns
Lorient.
The football
team. Yeah, he did own them, yeah.
So they're,
I don't know if he still does.
They're worth about whatever.
There were, I think it was north of 250 million anyway.
And do you know anything about Jessica Pegula?
Her dad is a major league...
Well, part of the consortium that owns the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills.
They're worth 9 billion.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And look,
who'd win the match between Pegula and Ferry?
Who wants it more? You know, like,
you see a lot of these power couples in tennis, don't you?
Oh, yeah. They get together, yeah.
But
yeah.
These people with generational wealth, right? There's often a lot of coldness to it, right? Not a lot of love. You got to prove to me that you're worth all this.
Succession.
You know, succession. David Beckham made his kids get jobs.
Yeah, that worked out for them.
You know,
getting on really well with
them
now,
aren't they? You're talking about. I think 75% of his kids are okay with them. Yeah.
Is that
all right. It's not a bad record, you know.
Yeah.
Conversion rate.
And so this guy Ferry, you made the point yourself, Matthew. Just because he's born with a silver spoon doesn't necessarily mean that this guy should be doing any normal job at all. So
he
goes out there a bit like Mido, the Egyptian striker.
Yeah,
didn't need to do any of this.
Mido.
Money beyond his means.
Yeah.
He'll ever need.
That's the thing. I do understand it's not quite like the story of Zico for Egypt yesterday, who was, you know, I think he was selling shoes or something in Egypt. I was reading a thing about him yesterday. Only a couple of years ago, and now he's playing for Egypt. That's a really good story.
Yeah.
But there is something to be taken, I think, from the, or there's something in it. I don't know what, it was the same. There's a fighter in the UFC who's got an awful lot of money and, or grew up around an awful lot of money, lives in like, and that's not typical of fighters. They don't tend to come from privileged backgrounds. But I think there's something in the, being able to, you know, the silk sheets and all that sort of stuff, and still making something new.
I just want a hug, like.
Because if
your dad's too busy,
it's true. But yeah,
how do I get his love?
It'd be very easy to do nothing with yourself, wouldn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he's doing something. He's against Flavio Cobbetti today in the quarterfinal of Wimbledon, and he's a qualifier. So this hasn't happened before for Wimbledon for a Brit, and it's been a terrible year for the British players.
For a Brit, right?
Yeah,
it is.
Oh, it's happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
He's French British, isn't he?
Becker wasn't. He was a qualifier.
I don't know, but he was a teenager, so I presume he would have had to come through the rounds, but I don't know that for sure. This is 1985 you're talking about.
I think he was a qualifier.
But he was a kid doing this.
French-born is Arthur Ferry.
French-born and England-raised.
Two French parents.
Yeah, both, yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how...
You think his nationality might shift a little later today, is it?
No. Yes, exactly what I think. That's exactly what I think, yeah. Tends to be the case.